My name's Jerry Hanley. I wear a variety of hats. That's why I'm getting bald here. I'm the executive director of Merlot, which really means I'm a wine steward. My job is to help people enjoy themselves with our resources. But in some sense, there are important consumables that help make life better, and that's really what we try to do in Merlot. Okay. Now the question is, what the heck is a learning object? Okay. And it is content that has a learning objective associated with it. That there's a purpose behind the use of that content related to learning. And that has implications, so it's going to help someone teach with this content. All right? So the learning object has to have some sort of learning objective at a minimum. Now, there are lots of other aspects about learning objects. You got your learning object metadata standards that have 87 fields and all that other stuff, but you know, that's not the definition of it. It's really in its utilization that really makes the key. One of the other questions, Minfin?
Grace,
okay. She has to know, what's the difference between open courseware and learning and Merlot? We're a digital library of learning objects. Okay, so it's more the units that someone who wants to build a course and make it open if they choose to. All right, so its job is to enable, facilitate faculty, staff, students creating these courses with simulations, animations that you don't have to be a programmer for. But if you have the pedagogical expertise of what you want to achieve, you look for stuff and then build it. It's your, you know, tinker toys, you know, to build something quickly and efficiently.
So it's for the faculty, not the audience.
Well, there are two. There's for the faculty. It could be for your academic technology staff, people who are supporting faculty, and it's also a student learning library. You can send a student, say, you know what, I need to learn something about sensation perception. My faculty member gave me a lousy lecture. Where can I get materials? And have a little bit of interactive multimedia. All right, some of our systems are using it that way. And what you'll see about Merlot, and maybe that's, let me begin to get to it. Merlot is much more than just a content metadata repository. It's really about a community support service site. Okay. All right. Now, my day job also is I work for the California State University System. I'm the Senior Director for Academic Technology, and so my job is to infuse technology in 23 campuses, 21,000 faculty members, 400,000 students, who all work so well together, it's a one big happy family.
Uh-huh.
Right. Okay.
And now, sideways, did you have a dip in your
business? No. But just so, if you search Google on, if you search, put Merlot in Google, we're number one at the top, and we're competing with the wines, right? But one of the things, you know, when you look at, come on in, no problem. One of the things that we'll find, you know, this title of the conference is Advancing Effectiveness and Sustainability. So at least I wanted the agenda to say what we're going to focus in on a little bit, sustainability. I'm going to give you a quick tour of the Merlot vineyard here, talk about Merlot metrics. We have a tasting room, and we have a lot of fun here. And the key aspect, I was talking to Bob about a key aspect of why Merlot can be of value is if you can improve the quality of people's workflow. If I can make it easier for you to do a better job, then that's value to you, and that's why you might want to come to it. And then we'll talk about what's growing. You know, what's the next step here? All right. So sustainable open education. And one of the points I want to make is really for open education to be sustainable, it's all about an open community education. That it's the people who take the effort to make it work. And there are certain assumptions I think that we have in Merlot is one, expertise is distributed throughout a large, diverse, disconnected social community of people. I mean, education is not well organized. We are just, you might have heard the saying about what's a university? It's a place where a mutiny has occurred, but nobody's jumped ship. Okay, all right? And now the problem as an organization delivering services, it's a really hard thing to manage, right? So how do we, in a sense, we know it's out there, and the expertise in this product, the other aspect is it's the stuff that we produce is best managed by the people who created it, right? And it is their love of effort, is their expertise and knowledge. And one thing is, you produce it, and once I disconnect it, I cut the flower from the vine, it's going to wither pretty quickly. And so how do you kind of always continue to keep the content connected with the people who are using it, taking care of it, nurturing it, whatever it is? Now, you have this mess, this chaos going on, and so a community of people other than the expert needs to provide the means of aggregating, organizing, enabling the effective use. Because people developing are busy doing their thing, right? And so how do you really segment this community effort and have people do things that you don't need to do it, right? And partnerships among communities is the only way to design, deliver, sustain this. I mean, there's too much work for all of us. Come on in. Too much work for all of us to do to provide the total value. So it's all about partnerships. And that's what I'll talk a bit about Merlot too. And one of the things people think of Merlot as a learning object repository, but a key aspect is really about... Yeah, you know what? Let me just turn this off. I apologize. Okay. Now, in partnership aspects, this is another thing about Merlot. People think of it as a collection, but what really makes it is it's a consortium of higher education institutions. Come on in. Okay. It's okay. Do you have your passes?
We did.
Okay.
And the
principal signed off. Okay, good. We're just kind of going around really quick. This sustainability is about the community who has to sustain it. And the last point here is about partnerships, is each community must fulfill their own mission with a planned incidental benefit for your partner. So if I'm going to work with you, this partnership has to serve my needs, and at the same time, incidentally, it has to serve yours. But you're the person who has to take care of you serving your needs, and by my efforts, you get some benefits. And the same thing around it, by taking care of your needs, that you're moving your mission forward, and it helps me out, then that's the win-win, right? Building partnerships that say, I'm going to take care of you when it's not my job, when things get busy, sorry, but you're going to be withering on the vine there because I'm not going to be doing it. And that's how we have to think about partnerships. And the sustainability of open education really has to be each of us who are in this partnership has to be able to achieve the mission of our organizations. Okay. Now, what I'm going to do now is just give you a quick tour of Merlot. Okay. How many people know that Merlot is more than the wine? Okay. Or a little bit? All right. How many people this is kind of brand new to them about Merlot? Okay.
Are you thinking about changing the name to
Merlot? No. Merlot actually stands for Multimedia Educational Resource. So, you know, I'm actually a beer drinker, but, you know, okay. Now, I'm going to give you a little scenario here. I'm a faculty member in the College of Business. I'm actually a faculty member in cognitive psychology, but make believe I'm College of Business. I've been teaching for 25 years, and my dean says, you know, Jerry, you got to get with it. Student demand is expecting greater interaction, more multimedia. And I go, okay, well, what am I going to do? Where am I going to get this stuff? I'm not a programmer, you know. And I said, well, check out Merlot. Sure, you know, let's go to the bar, and I'll be happy to do it. No, let's go to the website. Okay. And so in here... just here, this is the home page, and here's kind of the content areas, and I'm just going to click on business here, right? And what shows up are the major topic areas within Merlot. What also produced here is kind of a hit list. In all of business, we have 2,276 materials. And I say, well, I teach in management. Let me see what's the subcategories in management. And so I got HR and ethics and conflict resolution. And the numbers right here tell you how many materials are in that content area. And I say, well, let's look at this one. Oh, this one has a Merlot Classics Award. And there's peer reviews, member comments, assignment. Well, let's check this thing out here. Now, here's your, for the techie folks here, here's your metadata catalog record or portions of it. And what I want you to show you here is, here's the title, and it was authored by the University of Bristol, and it was submitted by Ron Purser. And what's important to recognize about the Merlot collection is that it's built by the community of people frequently teaching in these areas. So rather than having someone going out, a grad student who may not have been in the classroom, all right, teaching these things, and you say, well, then who the heck is this Ron Purser? If I'm relying on someone putting this stuff in, am I going to trust this person? And this is an important aspect about Merlot that people don't often recognize, is that the collection is really a people, the member directory, in which the content of Merlot is produced by its membership. And so here's Ron Purser. He's a professor at San Francisco State University. Oh, nice CSU campus here. And an important aspect about this, Ron submitted this. And if I'm going to try this out for a first time, wouldn't it be very useful for me to give Ron a call or send Ron an email and say, how does this really work? Right? Because all the metadata in the world about what this thing is isn't in the teaching community isn't as effective as a peer saying, you know what, try this out, watch out for this, this can really help. And connecting to your colleagues can be a very powerful activity. I know in many of our campuses, there's one of you in your specialty area. So how do you find those other people? Okay, and Merlot becomes an important community. And I can say, here's Ron's filled this out, here's business and management, and if I click on here, I can find out who are all the other people who've cataloged themselves in business management. And we got 1,400 people. Okay. And so part of Merlot is how do you really create these communities of people around the materials themselves. The other aspect about Merlot is about 28,000 people who've registered, and I'll show you some of the specific data there, between students, faculty, staff, stuff like that. We have something of Virtual Speakers Bureau. When you become a member in Merlot, you can say, you know what, I'm willing to talk in your class. Right? We do that normally with physical people coming in. I can search the Merlot database, and we just roll this out. And so if I'm teaching a web CT, how can I get you in a threaded discussion or a chat coming into my course? Bringing in expertise that's not just a learning object, but really is a learning resource by a person. And let's say, oh, Ron submitted this. Well, what else has he done? You know, right? If I like Ron's taste, do I like his other stuff that he submitted? Okay. Now, for the user side, Ron's searching of the web. He's the one who's been out in Google searching this stuff, cataloging it at Merlot. You know, this is work that I don't have to do now. Right? And the other aspect about Merlot is, and I'll just show you some of these things, it's not only about the materials, but we have a functionality in Merlot where you add what's called assignments. K-12 called them lesson plans, right? How would I usually use this learning object in a class, right? And so if I wanted to, if I had an idea of what I wanted to do, here's a little form that I can fill out. The description, topics, what courses might be for, education level, what do students need to know ahead of time, learning objectives, blah, 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 right? And then I can add it. And I think this is an important thing about Merlot, is that it's not only a place where people put stuff, they register themselves, and they can then add their expertise in modular ways. I may not be one who builds materials, and I may not be really good at searching Google to find the good stuff, but I'm really good at coming up with creative ways of using it in the classroom, okay? And so here's one, Ron Purser, doing one in human resource management, and the issue of reusability. Here's Kathy Swift. Here's an object about global marketing. Same object, multiple purposes, okay? And so here's another assignment here. And I can say, well, let me, who's Kathy Swift? There she is. I give him a call. Da-da-da. All right? So part of this, the cycle here is how to connect the content and the material and the people who know information about that content to be a resource. Okay. Now, if you don't want to talk to anybody, that's fine. One of the things we do in Merlot, one of the strengths, one of the uniquenesses of the collection is we have a peer review process. Merlot has about 15 editorial boards on the different discipline areas. Here's the business folks here. All right. And these are the folks, like on a journal, who do the peer review. And what's the difference about Merlot, it is post-publication review. A journal is more the gateway, all right, and this is, we do it kind of post in a sense, publication. In Merlot, just in this business here are, we have an editorial board and we have ad hoc reviewers here, okay? And all those ad hoc reviewers are volunteers, okay? And you say, why the heck would they want to do this work, all right? And part of it is, if you think about the naming that we have, editorial boards, ad hoc reviewers, what does that sound like? Journals, right? And so when you think about tenure and promotion, I can talk of myself as an editor of a Merlot board. It has some cachet, and we also provide letters and all this other stuff, you know, to please the department. Well, okay. Now, one of the things that we do with our reviewers, we actually train them, which is unlike many other reviewers in your journals. Anybody submit a journal and get back two reviews and you wonder whether they read the same manuscript? Okay. It's called poor inter-rater reliability. All right. And what we do in Merlot is when you come in, there's a screening process. The characteristics of our reviewers, you have to be, you know, demonstrate expertise or scholarly expertise in the area, that you have to be known for your excellence in teaching. Okay. You have to have using technology in teaching and learning, and you have to have some association with professional societies. Those are the criteria. Now, I can't tell you that Jean Dory from Western Carolina College, I don't have that portfolio on her, but that's why we rely on our editorial boards who are out there finding the people who have those skills, and then we train them. We actually have manuals. We built an online tutorial to training people how to do a peer review report. Okay, and I think that's an important aspect about getting people to realize, well, why should we trust the business review panel? Why is their opinion any better? And we say, well, we train them. We have our criteria. The three criteria: quality of the content. If it's bad physics, no good. All right. Is it potentially effective as a teaching tool? We say potentially because it's the person who uses it that brings it to reality, right? And then is it easy to use? The usability of the technology becomes very important.
Do you reject the submissions?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, the editorial boards go through, they curate the collection. Things don't meet minimum standards, they come out. If it's marginal, let me bring up this point, is we leave it in the collection, because there's quality and there's utility. Sometimes little pieces can be extremely valuable for somebody, all right? And if someone took the time in their professional judgment that they think it's valuable to put their name in a public document, associate with it, that's kind of the minimal social pressures to posting, all right? And if people say, you know what, the editorial board say that this really has no value, pops out, and we block the URL from being submitted again. Okay, and so these folks put in the peer reviews. Now we've done a lot of work with users want as a review, all right? And they want short, bulleted, straight to the point, enough to support the decision to go do their own evaluation. If you asked a peer reviewer, they want to write a thesis, right? But the end user wants, just give me enough so I can decide, is this worthwhile for further investigation? And that's what you want to think about. Merlot's support services are really a decision support service. How do you inform the user more so they don't have to spend as much time choosing the materials for their particular use? Sure.
How do you see yourself potentially complementing affiliate, any, let's say, something with connections?
And, well, I mean, this is a clear case where there's stuff in connections that go on that that we need to talk. Right?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I do a lot of work.
I know.
I thought that's why I came. And this is so, there's this growing parallel universe and, between the two of you, and it's just astounding to me that you haven't stuck up yet.
Yeah, the point I made very early on, that education is a disconnected, diverse community of things just growing, right? And at some point you have to say, when does a partnership serve both our benefits? I just let things happen until...
Throwing this out there. My day job is I run a philanthropic interest of the guy that started Red Hat.
Uh-huh.
I'd be very interested in putting you guys together.
We'll be happy to... give some.
You guys have gone so far, and they've gone so far, and you do.
That's right. Yeah, and that's why we enjoy philanthropic people visiting and seeing the vision of what we can do together. Okay, is that enough BS for you? Okay, all right. Let's see. The other thing is, we have these peer reviews that are well managed, but we also have just anybody in the community can put in some comments. Okay. Debbie Howard here, personal valuation. I spent 2-3 hours total reviewing this. I especially like the format. I've been in manufacturing procurement for 20 years, and I must say this module would be great in any operations business student, okay? Or any employee in a training management position. May even be beneficial to employees on a manufacturing assembly floor, right? Here are people who are explaining their rationale of what they find value about this. And your choice is that person like me, and I may want to look at this in more thoroughly. So our job is to wrap a lot of the pedagogical context that people need to add in around these objects here. Okay.
Gary,
yeah.
Do you assume whatever content is in a learning object has been copyright cleared by the creator?
Okay. No. Okay. What we do in Merlot, and this is an area that we really need to work on, is here's a case, are there copyright restrictions? And the default is always yes. Now, what it is, I mean, and the Creative Commons is a copyright restriction, right? I mean, it's just particular form. And what... You know, we've been doing this since 97, okay? And we said, if we were going to wait for the copyright issue to resolve, we would never. So we just said, we'll just say, yes, there's a restriction, and you as the user and you as the provider, you work it out, okay? And my hands are off. I think what we're going to do, you know, this is a little bit the future, is the authors of our highly reviewed materials, we want them to really define and, you know, encourage them to use the Creative Commons licensing process. So it becomes clear right here what the kind of the usage conditions are.
You know, it's a really good educational opportunity to just go ahead and link to Creative Commons, which actually walks people through the choices really, really well. And because I think we're not taking advantage of these opportunities enough to really empower people that they, because by saying yes there, you're defaulting to the all rights reserved.
And so
you could actually just have a link there, the select your copyright and go to Creative Commons and
have
them do the education, right?
Well, the problem is, in this case here, is the University of Bristol are the people who authored it. Ron Purser submitted it. So Ron's not the person who has to fill out the copyright. You know, this is really... And in our peer review process, we develop a good relationship with our authors. And that's really the context in which we would want to say, hey, you know, by the way, we're reviewing this. It'd be really effective and useful for people if you did, you know, and link them that way. But, and then showing that on the metadata here, that this is a Creative Commons license. You know, it's not so easy to now build into your author relationship in a programmatic way, because that operation can kill lots of time if you don't have that really worked out well. I mean, it's the human resources is the biggest issue in managing a lot of this peer review process, so you got to really do it right. Yes?
Just to follow on with that question, when something's being reviewed, the peer review board will contact the author and say, we'd like to review your stuff, is that okay?
Yep.
And then afterwards they will get back and say, here's the review.
Yep. And what happens a lot...
At some point in that process, they could say, you haven't selected a license or something, so would you like to pick something from this medium?
Right.
Creative Commons, Share Alike, or whatever, or...
And or now, to understand the implementation of that, we have 250, 300 reviewers. And how do you ensure the consistency of that message that goes out across these people? It involves training. You've got to build up the policies. You have to build documentations for that to work well. Because if we can't scale it, we don't do it.
Yeah. And you need to add it to the metadata as well.
That's right, yeah. Which is not, I mean, all this work, good work that has to get done. That we go to Hewlett and other important people to help us provide the resources to make that happen. There are variable, okay? You can, if you submit it, a description, it happens immediately. Then it goes, a quick diversion here. Given my role, I have a workspace here, and I can show you what happens. I don't want to go here. We have a back-end tool for managing the whole peer review process. So once it's new, it gets queued into a database workflow tool for a peer reviewer. Then they select it and triage it, and they say, get it out because it's not good. It's a definitely review. Quick, put it on the fast track. Put it on a medium track because it looks okay. And this one, if we have time... And that's why it's somewhat unpredictable. If it's a really high-quality object, it gets on the fast track, and it can go through in about 2 months, right? Because we have two peer reviewers who have to do the evaluation, the contact back and forth, there's time, all that other stuff. So you can go from 2 months, or it can be a year and a half on some of our cases, depending upon the size of our editorial boards and the influx of learning objects in those areas. I would say a high proportion of them have had some level of review, and I'll get you some data on that. Okay? Let me suggest some other stuff. Let's say, how many people have their bookmarks well defined that, you know, when you go to your browser, you say, you know, let me look at my favorites, and you get a long list, you don't know what half of them are, right? Same issue our Google searches. I found it once, how do I find it again? One of the things in Merlot, you can say, I might want to add this to my personal collection. So, I can do this. I can just click this on and say, I want to add it. And here comes up a little tool for me to build. Here's my collections I have. And I'm just going to show you what it is. I have two little collections here, and I could create a new one if I wanted to. And then I'd put in my own annotation. And I think that's the important aspect about personalizing the meaning of that content for me. Okay. Now, the other important aspect about this is Merlot shows everyone's personal collections. So here's Kathy again. Well, what's the other stuff that she had? And on the issue of reusing, here's storytelling in the digital environment. Now, what the heck is a balloon manufacturing simulation? And I can say, well, what is Patty doing here? What's the other stuff in here? And I think this is the way you can begin to see how people have thoughts about the use of these different materials. Okay. The other aspect, this becomes a citation index, right? That people say, is this useful? Well, if I'm buying it, if I put it on my own bookshelf, then I must have found some value. I don't, and on the research side, I can also then go to all these folks in Merlot who've put it in a personal collection and do some more detailed investigation, which some foundation could be, you know, help fund that type of evaluation study.
Do we have the thing available in hard copy? other than downloading it, do you produce anything in hard copy?
Do we produce anything hard copy? No, but one of our partners is O'Reilly Media and the Safari U and all that stuff. I'll get to a little bit of that. Okay. Let me show you just one other thing here before we go off site in 15 minutes. One of the things we recognize and in all our user studies is faculty think of themselves within a discipline. And so in each of our editorial boards, we've created a community website, and I'll pick physics, for example, here, because we have a physics person here. All right, Jerry. All right. Now, one of the things we have here is this now creates a window into multimedia database, and as a physicist, I just want to see what's in physics. Merleau has RSS. Oh, I hit the wrong one. What's the most recently peer-reviewed materials in Merleau as of a little while ago? All right, and what's the most recently submitted materials? And I can just say, oh, let me look at music acoustics, and then I can get it right away. Okay, let me just go back here again. Now, what we've also done is to say, how do physics teachers teach with learning objects? And this is where we have the editorial boards provide that context. Merleau, physics teaching and learning. Here's the different type of resources, samples, what to do with tutorials, reference materials, usage issues, peer review. In a sense, these are physicists talking to physicists. If I want to know more about the people who are on the peer review process in Merleau, okay, beyond Merleau. This is a case, you know, Merleau has a partnership with the AAPT, American Association for Physics Teachers, and so we become, in a sense, a way to help AAPT to distribute their materials and connect to people who have common interests, right? And so these are the various partnerships or the various affiliations we have. And, you know, a physics student who's just come out of graduate school, all they know is a research. What about all those professional societies? I'm clueless, right? And my ability to organize this for them can be very useful, okay? We have other partnerships. Compadre, we do what's called federated search with Compadre, so you can search Merleau and search the Compadre database and get an integrated hit list of materials. So you don't have to go to the multiple areas. So just here's, again, partly what Merleau does is bring the resources to the person and improve the efficiency with which they can do their work. And then we have, you know, understanding the different type of learning materials in Merleau, and then some showcasing, you know. So here's some really cool stuff that you spend a little extra time on. Okay?
Jerry, what's the organizational structure of Merleau, I mean, people-wise, besides you?
I'll talk about that. Okay. All right, let me... so I can go through some of this stuff here. Okay. this is just some of the metrics here. Merleau started in 1997, and so I try to create a little, we didn't collect much data at all. but in 1999, you know, we had 355 users, and we were just, per month, and we were just excited. Man, we got all these people. But now we're up to about 30,000. And in the last year, we've almost doubled the number of unique users within a month per Merleau. All right. When we look at the distribution, We have students, faculty, staff. I'll show it a little later on. We have a bunch of people really participating in Merleau. And when we look at the growth rate of people joining, and this data is as of July of 2005, 700 people joining per month. And you know what? You don't have to be a member of Merleau to use it. You can be search and browse anonymously. Okay. So why are people joining? And some of it is, if they want to submit comments, collections, they want to create their own personal collections, they want some level of affiliation, that becomes the reason. A lot of it is, you know, Merleau creates your own personal homepage if you want to, right? I mean, you saw Kathy Swift, and this is becoming very useful in the K-12 environment. A lot of the K-12 teachers, they don't have to worry about the technology. They come into Merleau, adjunct faculty members, this is another very powerful tool for them because they often don't get very good technical support.
Members
This is members. Okay. We're up to actually about 28,000, and we're about 800 a month now. Okay. Number of materials, we got about 12,000, and about we delete about 200, you know, last year about 200 per year. We do an automatic link checker, and the community of people are the people who let us know when there's a broken link because their membership role. They hit webmaster, and so we have a whole methodology for doing that. So one of the questions people say is, if you're not storing it, how do I know I can count on it? Well, if you just a really simple persistence rate is, we're about 98% of the stuff is there during the year. Okay. Now, if people say, well, that's not 100%. How often do you go into a library and get the book that's supposedly cataloged in your physical library, right? And in my CSU, I run system-wide library initiatives. Trust me, I know it's a little bit lower than that. I also know about 35% of your collection in your libraries are never touched by people. Okay. Now, these next numbers here is when you look at who are the people in the past in contributing this. The 80-20 rule isn't here. It's really 7%. And one of the strategic goals of Merlot that we have is how do we build people in contributing more of the materials? Because we have some people who are your advanced people. And what we want to do is how do you build more and more people to become really contributors in that life? So it's moving people up the participation ladder. Okay. Number. Yes.
Say percent of people, those are percent of Merlot members or percent of visitors?
Oh, no, percent of Merlot members. Okay. Because you have to be a member to contribute. You cannot.
The denominator could be anything you see.
I'm sorry?
You have to be a member to contribute, but the denominator, when you determine the percent, could be total.
No, it's the total number of total members. So there's 26,000 members, 1,800, and that's where you get the 7%. Okay. The other aspect about what percentage are still active or not, those issues. Now, this is a question of the peer review. We have about 14% have them posted. Almost 9%, 9,000 are in our triage process. That is, there's some place in the peer review process. The percent that is not are places often where we don't have editorial boards. Okay. It'll say peer-reviewed, selected for review, review in process. We have some terminology there to let you know. Okay, we do outreach. If you're a member, we send the Merlot grapevine. Okay, I heard it through the grapevine. We have a Merlot conference, and some of these and LMS is one of the things we have partnerships with Blackboard, WebCT, Angel, D2L, and something's happening with Moodle. And then we'll be working with Sakai at some point. And what we look at this is, it's like putting the Starbucks in every supermarket. A Merlot search box, we were the first open source open source building block that Blackboard has. We rolled that out in the beginning of this year, and we had many people adopt that. How are we organized? Sally talked about business models. We're a consortium, and you were right on the money about the value that we bring is aggregating the need and the little resources that each of us has and collectively doing something that then serves everyone's common interests. Very important. Sustaining members, those are the people who pay more money. System level is like the SUNY system, Oklahoma, Louisiana, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Tennessee, Virginia, state systems. And then the campus level, we have a CUNY system, Cornell, Seton Hall, St. Petersburg College, stuff like that. We have 15 editorial boards. The 135, 157, that's the supported peer reviewers and editorial boards, and then the volunteer folks. There's 13 people, headcount, and about 8 EP equivalent positions. So there's not a lot of people behind the curtain making this work. Okay.
So understand where do the funds come from to keep it going?
Each of those people, a system level pays me $25,000 a year, and then they support faculty members participating in the editorial boards. Okay. At the campus level, it's $6,500 a year. And then they provide some faculty members for our editorial board. So it's a combination of fee and in-kind contributions.
Who are your sustaining members?
The CSU?
Yeah.
All right. And Canada, the CLOE initiative.
Oh.
All right. And that is, well, the CSU puts in a whole lot more than $50,000 a year. We actually put in about $350,000, $400,000 at this point. Okay. Because now you say, well, why would we do that? Okay. By that investment, I get, I have 250 faculty members working on this project. And if I had to fund in the CSU 250 faculty members at even at the lowest rate of $5,000 a pop per semester, I couldn't afford it. Right? And I've gotten everyone else to do the work for me. So this is again about the community effort, is how do you make it reasonable for people to support? And if I get one of you and one of you and one of you, and over time I got a whole lot of people who can get something done. Okay. We also get grants. And we have corporate partners. And this is, I think, an next important aspect about Merlot is slipstreaming is the way we work. And if you think about, anybody see the Tour de France? All right. And how do they race? What do? They get in groups, right? And why do they get in groups? And these are competitors. Why do they stick together?
I mean, it cuts wind resistance.
That's right. The person up in the front has to work a lot harder, right? And they, in a sense, plow the field, the airfield for them, and everyone behind there, so I can improve my performance by following behind you, okay? And so I do less work, and I can go faster by leveraging your work. Now, the way those groups work is you rotate, you know, and that's kind of, and it doesn't matter whether you're a cooperative or your competitor, you know that together you can do a whole lot better together than you could do individually. All right? And now and it could be intentional or incidental. You know, there's stuff that Connections is doing that, you know, is raising the idea of using learning objects that we benefit from. Because now if I talk about Merlot and they know about Connections, they say, oh, I get it. Okay? So I think there's a lot of stuff we can do. All right. And here are the groups we're slipstreaming with. One on the digital library side, Merlot is not going to be the union catalog. All right, we're not going to become OCLC. All right, in various ways in the learning object field. All right, it's about building partnerships, and these are all the digital libraries that we are working on and using our federated search technology, so I can go and search that content from wherever I am. So if I'm right now, the Edna is the Australian Digital Library. You can go into Edna, search Merlot. I can go into Merlot and search Edna. Professional societies. EDUCAUSE Learning Initiative, their emphasis is on student learning and how technology enables that. You know what? They're doing great work. We pass it over to our faculty members. Say, you know what? If you want a good design, read this stuff. It's really useful. And so I don't have to produce it, but I become a means to distribute that. The Carnegie Foundation doing their snapshot stuff. We have all our LMSs. O'Reilly Media, they are actually supporting our IT editorial board. They're giving us, we created Merlot O'Reilly Fellows, right? Pretty, a little bit of stipend, and a faculty member says, I'm a Merlot O'Reilly Fellow, put it on their Vita, RTP, that's kind of nice, okay? And then we have Sun Microsystems and Macromedia. Sun pays us some money, which we appreciate, not a whole lot, but just enough, and they did something. We were on the Sun News Today on their front page of their website. They came in and brought a professional video group in, and they shot a video about Merlot. Let us sell Merlot. I couldn't afford. You know, that was probably $30,000 worth of time that those spent, and all the production side. You know, I don't have that, but we now have that, and they've in a sense sold it for us. We got time. All right. Let's go. Why are we collaborating? Because it's really useful. Okay. Basically, by having an engaged set of faculty members, everyone benefits. Merlot, and I'll just stop here, given it's 4 o'clock, and then I'll get to the last slide. if you look at what I've talked about in Merlot, when faculty have to design courses, if you help in the search and discovery, design and learn experience, teaching, all these things can lead to more effective uses. We have Globe here. All right. And then, this is what I want to say. Students are using Merlot, and those member comments, these become reflective practices on what am I gaining out. Now, as a faculty member using the DNA site, if I have some information what a student thinks, I can think of that as being useful. We have all these other people. Now, here is what can we do together. You folks can use Merlot right now. You know, if you've got a project, you want to add your stuff, you want to create personal collections, RSS feeds, you got it. If you want to be an institute partners, no fees, just responsibility. For example, we have the Association for Theater and Higher Education. They want to use the Merlot infrastructure to build the collection. You say, great, tell me your taxonomy. You do the work, we got it. We can also customize portals for you. We're going to be doing this for the CSU business. We can do something for you as well. And this is what we want to move from here to there. Okay. Thank you for the run through. And given we're at 4 o'clock, if people have questions, I'll be happy to answer them individually.